So in Virginia, a grand jury has indicted the mother of a six-year-old boy who shot and wounded his first-grade teacher. You remember this case. It was so shocking, and it's still shocking, at Richneck Elementary School. Now, prosecutors a few weeks ago declined to charge the six-year-old boy because both of his age, but also his history. He's got some developmental issues and some pretty extreme challenges. But they are now going to charge mom under a misdemeanor safe storage style law, but also they're elevating it to a felony by charging her with felony general neglect. And along with the Oakland County case stemming from the Oxford gunman, Ethan Crumbly, and his parents, this is another step in what appears to be a growing trend of finding ways to hold parents accountable when their children take guns to school. Todd Flood is the attorney and managing partner at Flood Law, one of the outstanding criminal law attorneys we have here in the state of Michigan, and he joins us live with a look at this. Todd, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, guy. How are you?
I'm good. This is a fascinating case because it's novel both in the way they're approaching it, but also because the age of the child involved. Is the bar for supervision and oversight in this case going to be higher because this child is 6 years old? And what do you think about the use of the neglect law?
Well, two things. One, the fact that the child was a special, needs child or was in a class setting where the parents had to show up every day to the class. This time the shooting took place, the parents did not show up. So I think does put an extra onus on the parents for their duties to make sure that this child who's troubled needs, extra care. There is the misdemeanor charge that seems to be on all fours. That is just leaving a gun in the access or ability for the child to have access to it and be have harm to himself or others. That misdemeanor seems simple to charge. The felony, to your point, that's a gross negligence charge where the standard for which the statute that I just read is the reckless disregard standard. So the reckless disregard by the parents, the mom, of having someone else where the child is a harm to himself or someone else seems to be it seems to fit, right? Because I kind of make this the magic trick. It's not hard to figure out who had the gun, who owned the gun.
Right.
They did, right? It's not hard to figure out that the child got access to the gun. So what's the defense? They would have to say, some sort of magic trick. We had it secured, but we don't know how we got it. Well, that doesn't fly, right? So it wasn't properly secured, even though that's their claim right now. You can see that's where the defense is mounting. But when you leave a gun an access or area to where a child can gain access to it, and you have notice or knowledge that the child is troubled, you're put into a particular spot where you have this duty, and they breached that duty ultimately with the disregard, knowing that he could hurt himself. The interesting part is the difference between, you juxtapose this case with the Oxford case, they didn't go after the six-year-old for obvious reasons. EC in the Oxford case, yes, they charged with first-degree murder. Here, there is no diversion or a tactic to go after the child, the six-year-old, and I can see the distinguishing factors. And the parents in the Oxford matter, the involuntary manslaughter charge, they had a duty, they breached that duty, they knew that the child was terribly troubled in a spiral distress. And so you can see if you do the juxtaposition of the two cases, you can see the difference. I'm not charging the six-year-old in that case. It's just not going to be the case. And I can also imagine, I've taken testimony from a six-year-old before. It's a very difficult challenge, but the prosecution has to be prepared to potentially put that child on the stand.
I wanted to ask you about that because, that's fraught with all kinds of peril, isn't it?
It is. It is such a difficult challenge, but you have to strategize ahead of time. You only need probable cause to charge the felony. The misdemeanor is easy, but the felony. So if the parents say and bring in a witness or show that the gun was locked and secured, then who's your witness that you're going to put on the stand to show that it wasn't? And then you have to put the child on. You may have an expert that comes in and testifies about how the lock was easily disabled or how it was something that, you know, could be not secure enough. But you very well may have to put the six-year-old on.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that that could be fraught with peril, but it's a realistic, necessary res gestae witness. It's a witness that's, you know, not only did the act, but saw the body of the wrong. We, you know, that they're the ones that the child, the one that saw how to get the gun.
Well,
and just ask those simple questions. How did you get the gun?
The neglect part of this, though, is interesting because it basically says that the child is the victim, not the teacher that was wounded. So is this kind of a square peg and a legitimate use of the neglect law? Because it was intended to protect the child, not society in general. And could they do that here in Michigan? Or would that be a misuse of the neglect statute?
So read this, when you read the statute and you go through it, it's a harm to himself or to others. So it's that disjunctive or to others. So it's when the child neglect is with the statute and bumps it up to that felony, the disregard, the reckless disregard that you do not supervise your child who could be at risk to himself or to others.
Okay.
You're using that child as the victim in the case, and he was the one that was put in the position by the neglect of the parents, and someone else got injured, right? You would imagine if the teacher died, they would have gone for the involuntary manslaughter charge potentially against the mom, but the victim, the teacher, the school teacher, lived in this particular case.
And
it also is very interesting about the fact that they sued the school
right.
for $40 million. And when you listen to the prosecutor in this case, that investigation's not over because the school is possibly going to be getting a grand jury convened against them as well and how this happened.
Well, and that sounds all too familiar as to what we're seeing up in Oxford, where the civil liability coverage is hurting the fact-finding on all sides. Really quickly, you pointed out a case that I now remember, but I had forgotten about, and that is the case of little Christopher Byers, who died in a house fire because the neighbor next door, who was only 6 years old, set the apartment complex on fire. And his mother was charged with involuntary manslaughter. So we've got a case of similar here, and it's been done.
Right, right. And Guy, the reason why I threw that to you was because I believe you covered that case back in the day. But regardless, that case is kind of the footprint, if you will, or the landscape, if you will, to follow where this child, the mother was given multiple notices that the child was basically an arsonist. I mean, a pyro. I mean, the fact that the child had lit other things on fire, the carpeting and other destructions within the school and the like. The mother had Child Protective Services come to the home, told, and other people came to the home, told the mom, hey, listen, you must keep all incendiary devices, matches, whatever, lighters away from this child. She didn't. She left. She put the matches on top of the refrigerator. The child went up on the counter, got the matches, lit the curtains on fire in the bedroom. A little child downstairs died. The mother was prosecuted for involuntary manslaughter in that particular case and was sentenced 4 years to 15 on a felony. And because she was given notice, had a duty to protect others and the child. And here you go. So that was quite some time ago. So it's not as novel.
Right.
As one might think. It's just a matter of facts.
But she was charged with involuntary manslaughter, which seems a much more applicable law or statute than neglect. It almost looks like in Virginia that they undercharged this child. But thanks for reminding me of it. You know, that's the sad thing about age and covering as many stories as I've covered. You start to forget some. But that one was so horrific. But I thank you for reminding me, because it was a terrible case. We had one out in Wolverine Lake that was almost as bad. Todd, thanks very much, and I appreciate your time. And there does seem to be this growing search for accountability, and we'll be covering more of these, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Guy, always a pleasure talking with you. Thanks.
Take care, Todd. 415 on News Talk 760 WJR. When we come back, something you need to know about before you charge up your phone.